Chapter 10 Out of the Mouths of Vampires. Harry rested one hand against the door of Malfoy's mansion, and wondered who would know if he turned back now. He carried the burden on his shoulders of the knowledge his investigations had granted him. And yes, it was knowledge that would comfort Malfoy, and knowledge that was not exactly new. He might chide Harry for bringing him old news. He would not care about it in the same way Harry would. It was not what he might care about, but what he might urge, that was the problem with Harry seeing Malfoy this month. It was the poised, trembling crack in the middle of Harry's soul that might open to Malfoy's call. He could not deal with that. He turned his back to leave, and the door swung open behind him with a small click, like the springing of a trap. Harry turned around and squared his shoulders. Well, after all, he had never expected it to be that easy.
"Lord Malfoy will see you," said the vampire on the door,
one of the female vampires Harry had seen before. The one with the most grey in the middle of her black eyes. She bowed, and held the bow until Harry walked past her and into the warm, muffled, echoing dark of the inner chambers. The door shut behind him with the same low click, and the vampire came up to walk in front of him as a herald. Harry watched her back. She could have walked behind him, and then he could have felt the paranoia of wondering how much hunger flowed through her, how long it would take for her fangs to pierce the back of his neck. Or she could have walked beside him, and then she would have seemed like a guard of honor. "I shouldn't have come." Aside from no real news to impart, his body jangled like a piano played out of tune the closer he got to Malfoy. His muscles twitched and flinched, and he could feel his heartbeat in his throat. The delicate tilt of the vampire's head in front of him said that she had heard it too. "I shouldn't. No one wants me here." That wasn't true, of course. Malfoy did, and Harry had awakened from dreams of the mansion, of Malfoy, of vampires for the last 4 nights in a row. He closed his eyes and his feet found their way down the corridors without assistance, without pause. His heartbeat was already slowing, as though the air carried calming draught in the form of a gas. Harry swallowed and swallowed again. He wanted to halt and touch his throat, probe the sensation of thickness in it, and make sure he wasn't choking. But he didn't have the chance. The vampire ahead of him swept the door to the throne room open, announced,
"Aura Potter to see Lord Malfoy,"
and then bowed and once again held the pose obnoxiously until Harry could move past her and see the interior of the room. Malfoy sat on his dark throne, his head turned to the side this time, so that his eyes met Harry's immediately. Harry came to a stop, and yes, the split in his soul opened wider and wider and wider, and filled him with pulsing, glorious light. He tried to swallow, but it was difficult when he couldn't breathe. The thickness in his throat seemed to shrink as he thought about it, though, to fill him with something better to breathe than air. He extended one hand before he thought about it, and then pulled it back to his side. Or he would have, if Malfoy hadn't crossed the room in one of those quiet, swift blurs that Harry had known vampires could make from his first year of aura training, and taken it instead. He turned his head to the side, eyes so intent on Harry
He couldn't have missed the moment when he tensed unacceptably and placed cool, dry lips against the back of Harry's knuckles. Something left a brief spot of wetness on Harry's skin, but he didn't know if it was Malfoy's tongue or his saliva. Malfoy didn't release the hand the way Harry had thought he would when he was done making his gesture, but he did straighten. He simply cradled Harry's wrist, his expression calm, unanswerable, and when Harry made a small tucking motion with his arm, Malfoy's fingers tightened. His smile was charming, if you overlooked the fangs and the strength in the grip and the coldness of his skin and everything else he was.
"I heard about the Ashkanova case," he said, his voice so deep and lulling that Harry thought for a moment it was like being drowned in melted chocolate. Of course it wasn't. Melted chocolate would be warm.
"What case? Oh." Harry shook his head. Yes, the case had happened 3 days ago, but already it seemed to have retreated before the weight of his new knowledge. That wasn't the news he had come to Malfoy carrying on his shoulders.
"Well, I brushed up against death, but it left me none the worse for wear."
He smiled at Malfoy and thought for a moment that Malfoy's fingers moved on his wrist, caressing rather than holding.
"A day in hospital," Malfoy said. "Half the blood in your body replaced."
The flare in his eyes struck deep, but not too deep, and Harry licked his lips. Malfoy tracked the movement of his tongue with alert eyes, not pretending that he was not, and then looked up again.
"I would not call that none the worse for wear."
Harry gave him a plastic smile.
"Well, we have different definitions."
He nodded down at his captive fingers and flexed them. Malfoy's fingers moved to cover them.
"For example, I thought it was your head that you put in the lion's mouth, not your hand."
Malfoy turned it over.
"Ah," he said, "but is it not the old metaphor, an offer of one's hand? I am no longer human. But I haven't spent enough years away from the human world for that to change."
Harry shivered and bowed his head. Malfoy's free hand had come up and slid around the side of his neck, fingers running up his jaw and down again, down to the pulse, up to his ear. Harry's heart doubled and rebounded beneath it, but not from fear.
"Of course, I'm not sensible enough to do that from fear."
"It was an hour before I heard that you had survived, Ashkanova," said Malfoy. "The report that you were in hospital came first. Until I heard that you lived, the ministry could have had their venegans. I would have come forth, and all the walls of the holding cells would not have stopped me." Harry clenched his teeth and told his heartbeat, his stuttering breath when Malfoy's fingers traveled back and along his collarbone, his whole stupid sentimental stupidity, to stop it. The knowledge he carried had to come out now. Malfoy's existence and the existence of his flock mattered more than what Harry felt about him. And it certainly mattered more than the privilege Harry had to keep visiting him.
"Ah, that's familiar."
Guilt like broken glass flared in him. At last he understood why he hadn't wanted to talk about this. Because Malfoy would do what he had to do as a dominant vampire, and that meant Harry would never see him again. But that was for the best. It had to be. How much could the light in his soul matter against the knowledge that the Ministry wanted to destroy Malfoy and had come up with a way to do so?
"Malfoy," he whispered, and found himself mouthing it against chill fingers as Malfoy's hand had risen to cover his mouth.
"Call me by my first name," Malfoy whispered. "Speak that, and I promise to listen to whatever you say."
Harry hesitated, all too aware that a promise to listen wasn't a promise to act, but he had already trusted far more dangerous promises from Malfoy. So he mouthed,
"Draco,"
and saw Malfoy lit his eyes and twist his head to the side, baring his throat to Harry once more.
"Harry,"
he said back, and Harry clenched his fists and ground the glass in his soul underfoot once more, all so he would have the pain.
"I know," he said. "I heard them talking about it. I thought they granted me the position of negotiator because I was making a fuss about them eliminating your flock, and they wanted to punish me and save the embarrassment I could have caused them if I sought publicity. Now I've overheard them talking. It was more than that. They always meant to kill you, but you were the target, not me. Someone suggested to them that you might become fascinated with me because of the old rivalry we had. I was always meant to lure you out into the open, whether you hated me or..." He couldn't speak the other word. He couldn't profane it like that. And even as he lunged the word profane to scorn in his head and told himself he was an idiot, he still kept silent and fixed his eyes on Malfoy. Malfoy stood in silence back, and Harry found himself holding his breath, trying to match the pure, almost terrible serenity Malfoy showed. He failed, of course, and all his breath rushed out at once in a whoosh. Malfoy opened his mouth and showed him his fangs, and Harry smiled before he realized that he didn't know if he should classify that as a smile. Malfoy's fingers smoothed up and down his neck. He had let go of Harry's hand and seemed instead to want to measure the heart, the width, the smoothness, anything he could touch, of his throat. But he still never looked away from Harry's eyes. So Harry looked back and let himself think about impossible things until Malfoy spoke. "You were meant," he said. "You did not mean. That makes the difference."
Harry half tossed his head and then went still, because Malfoy's hand had moved around to the back of his neck and pressed gently down. "It could still happen. If you venture out because of me, whether it's at the time the Ministry anticipated it or not, even if it's to avenge me, whatever, then you will still die. They will strike with overwhelming force. I didn't realize. I don't know if you realize how badly you've scared them. There hasn't been a flock this powerful and disorganized in a long time. I thought you were thinking all the anti-vampire legislation revolved around you because of your ego, but it really was directed against you, at least all the stuff they've passed in the last few months. All of it. I'm sorry that..."
"Apologies I will not accept from you,"
Malfoy said, and lifted his hands to cup Harry's face.
"A kiss, yes. Desires, wishes, declarations, facts, plans. Nothing else."
Harry winced and reached up to pry away Malfoy's fingers. Malfoy let him, but it was clear that it was letting, and that Harry would never get rid of him completely if Malfoy didn't want him to. Harry felt his stupid heartbeat once more to step up the pace, and there was light inside him, and he shook his head. "You have to distance yourself from me," he said. "I can't stop coming here, because then the ministry will realize what's up and try something else. But you can. You can move your flock to a safer space. You can go, Draco. That's what you need to do."
Malfoy's hand swept over him like white wind and ended on his waist. It might have been a full embrace. Harry felt as held as if it was.
"I will not let the ministry dictate to me," said Malfoy.
"Neither to you.
I said we are equals. I will not run because you will not. I do not choose separation, neither do you. You only advise it because you think you must." He leaned nearer. "So we will not."
Harry raised his hands and curved nerveless fingers around Draco's.
"But if something were to happen to you because of me," he said, "then I couldn't bear it."
"So it is down to Gryffindor guilt," Draco said, and moved closer so that Harry could feel the cold of his body as he might feel heat.
"I do not choose to rule my life by that. We continue, and the ministry will lose patience first. I am a vampire. I can afford to wait."
"What about me?" Harry whispered. Draco met his eyes again.
"I can afford to wait,"
he repeated, and his voice had something horrible and beautiful at the end of it, something many-eyed and many-fanged. Harry turned his cheek against Draco's palm and stood there, and if he had not known the morning was coming, when Draco would need to retreat and sleep, he would have stayed there for the rest of the night. As it was, he stepped back and laid a kiss on Draco's palm in passing, something to burn and bless.
"I am strong enough to bear this. So is he."
That knowledge carried him back out the door again and into the morning that always came.
Chapter 11. Sirius, now.
"You will not do me the discourtesy of lying this time." Draco spoke his words with a drawl, because the only other option was to snap them, leap off the throne, and force Potter to the ground so that he wouldn't walk and that would hurt him further. So Draco launched on the throne and barely opened his mouth to speak. Someone who did not know him well or thought all his humanity abandoned for the beast would not think he cared. Potter knew him and paused with one foot over the threshold of the throne room, his eyelashes fluttering. Then he sighed and moved further into the room, his head half hanging as if he thought that would make his throat less attractive to Draco. Draco splayed his nails out to scratch flakes of stone from the chair arms and rose to his feet. Movements his iron control still demanded. "There is no blood to smell," Potter said, and limped carefully to the chair Draco kept for him. Draco thought for a moment of summoning Amelia and the others to bring a bed instead, but rejected the notion. Potter would misread the gesture, and Draco was not in the mood to spend time combating his mistaken perceptions. "The healers at St. Mungo's cleared me for duty. I honestly thought you wouldn't. I thought you wouldn't care all that much as long as I was here and surviving." Draco strolled down the steps of the dais, concentrating. His foot thumped on the stairs with more force than a human being's, but not sufficient to crack the rock. His toenails, he knew, if he drew off the soft shoes that protected his feet, would look like transparent talons, gleaming fit to rival moonlight. He could share skin with those nails, as he could with the ones on his hands. He could tear through steel. He could bite out the throats of a dozen victims in a minute, if he did not give himself time to linger and taste the blood. He focused on those things because it was easier to do than think about the fact that he could not protect Potter from himself. "Potter," he said quietly, and Potter cocked his head at him, smile faint and wearing out in lines around his eyes. "If you believe that I cared for nothing more than your survival, then you would not have looked at me as you did last time." "Damn," Potter said and leaned back on his chair. That movement seemed to jostle something inside him, and he winced. Draco crossed the distance between them, but ended up behind the chair, his hand resting on Potter's shoulder. Potter turned his head so his cheek rested against Draco's arm and sighed. "There were times in the last month when I thought it was a dream," he said at last. "Not the news I discovered or the way you refused to leave, but the rest of it." "Why?" Draco asked, bending down, exhaling into Potter's hair. "Because everyone else tells you that vampires are not to be trusted, that you should find something else, someone else, to feed your fantasies." He smiled and tapped the edge of one fang against Potter's earlobe, then had to stop. Even that close, the scent of skin, the blood, the warmth, overwhelmed him. "Give me names, they will not say such things for long." "It wasn't anything they did," Potter said shortly, though the rush of blood through his veins faster than normal said that yes, there existed people who would tell him such things about Draco. Draco smiled and thought of skin tearing. "It was something I did to myself. I've been involved in situations this month that showed me an uglier side of myself. Something I've never thought I could do. I've learned that I'm not honest and honorable and all the rest of the rot that I try to sell people." "I don't know why I would be attractive to someone like you," he whispered the last words. Draco would have heard them if he stood on the other side of the world, if there was an ocean of blood between them. This time he extended his tongue and licked the side of Potter's neck. Potter went still, but not before he had turned his head slightly to the side in an unmistakable gesture of welcome. "You have stood in front of me," Draco said. "You have killed for me. You have admitted that you try to treat vampires like humans when you can, and that you have fought legislation that aims to control my flock. If the position of negotiator was meant to punish you, you reacted against it by making sure that you took it over yourself and treated it seriously." He brought his other hand into play, touching Harry's other shoulder, massaging them as a way to force him to relax. Harry closed his eyes and tilted his head back, letting Draco do as he would. "I tried once, before I thought about it as deeply as I should have, to claim you as mine. Your blood tastes good to me." Harry snorted weakly. "But a lot of people's blood might taste good to you. You're a vampire." "You think I have lost my sense of taste since I died?" Draco asked him into his hair. "That is not true, in any way I can think of. I would not take a lover who endangered myself or the flock. A lover who was not attractive. A lover whose blood was mere sustenance to me." He touched Harry's face beneath the eye with a single sharp nail, and Harry's fingers came up and curled around his finger, pressing indentations into Draco's hard skin. Draco closed his eyes and hummed. "Now, tell me what you did that convinced you of this." "You spent a lot of time telling me to tell you shit," Harry mumbled. "Sometimes I think you say that more often than any other order combined." "If you would tell me what concerned you the moment you entered the room," Draco mumbled back, "I would not need to issue that order." "And if you believe that your wounds are of less interest to me than attempts to attack my flock, I would say that the mistake is yours, and a sad one." Harry spent a few moments in silence, gathering his strength. Draco knew it was so and did not press him to speak, but contented himself with learning the scent of Harry's hair and the places on his scalp that made him murmur and turn his head. "I went on a typical raid," Harry said, his voice quiet. "We had all the information we should have needed about the people who were inside the building, how they were positioned, what they had done." His voice slipped for a moment and then recovered. "I was supposed to go in through the front doors. It was a small house with a large room on the ground floor, where they'd knocked out all the walls, and I would have line of sight on the other aurors as well as the dark wizards. It started going wrong the instant we went in there. Someone used Peruvian darkness powder, and someone has to have a long talk with George about his clients." He opened one eye so he could catch Draco's. Draco smiled back, not minding the reference to his own use of the powder at all. The moment when he had led Death Eaters into Hogwarts seemed so long ago, belonging to a part of his life when he was still human, a part of his life before he discovered his appreciation for Harry. "And we couldn't fucking see," Potter's voice descended. "I cast Lumos, but it only goes so far in powder like that. I heard people blundering and cursing, and I recognized some of them by their voices. But the criminals weren't cursing. they were trying to slip away as fast as they possibly could. I heard someone scream. Then, not Ron, another aura, Hawthorne, a bloke who might make something of himself one day, if he survives this. Last I knew, he was in hospital and still trying to recover use of his limbs. Harry tensed up again. Draco leaned down and rested his cheek on Harry's hair, heavily enough to drive him into the chair. It was a less violent response than he might have showed when Harry expressed concern about someone else, and he hoped Harry understood that. Harry seemed to take the hint, since he reached up and rested a hand on Draco's temple, before continuing. So, I cast a spell that cleared away some of the darkness powder, and I saw Hawthorne down in the middle of it all, with a spell that was eating away his nerves. Standing over him was one of the dark wizards, who'd been... God, it sounds so stupid to talk about it now. Changing people into animals that they could sell at high prices. She looked at me and she smiled. She was torturing Hawthorne to death right in front of me, and she smiled. Draco, I set her on fire. Draco purred at him. Perhaps it's because fire would consume me quickly instead of slowly, but that does not seem like such a horrible way to die. Harry shook his head, nearly hard enough to dislodge Draco. Draco held him down again. If this was the only way he could embrace Harry for the moment, then he would take it. Harry would sooner or later calm down enough that Draco could hold him more easily. Tell me what happened. He said closer to a question this time. Harry gave a dutiful chuckle before he closed his eyes, and Draco could almost feel the currents dancing in his brain as he sought for the words. Draco, it was horrible. Burning isn't a quick way to die for humans. It's horrible painful. And I followed her. I kept the flames alive when she would have put them out. Then I hoisted her into the air and used her as a torch for everyone to overcome the darkness powder and light up what they were doing. And I did all that before I even thought of helping Hawthorne. He lapsed into silence. Draco stood with him and used the silence to listen to his blood, the rise and rush of it through his veins. Did the other hours recoil in horror? Draco whispered at last, and he knew what answer those other hours should hope for, if Harry did not. All except Ron, Harry said, and Draco shifted. Harry twisted around to look at him and add hastily, "Don't hurt them, please. They were right to. I wasn't sane right then. And I felt horrible afterwards." Draco moved around in front of the chair to kneel before Harry. Harry followed him with his eyes, his hands clenching and holding each other. Draco forced the fingers gently apart so that he could hold them, smooth and flat on Harry's knees, patting the knuckles and the skin in between. When that didn't seem to distract Harry, he bowed his head and kissed them, pushing his tongue against the webs of Harry's fingers. Harry relaxed with a small gasp. "I do not think you're a horrible person," Draco said. "I think you can be a killer, violent in protection of those you determine need your protection. I am a predator myself, Harry. A killer. Did you think I would reject you because of that? Harry sat still. To his credit, he seemed to be thinking deeply. Draco let him think, but kept his fangs near Harry's hands. Now and then he turned his head to the side so that one or the other fang would brush lightly, so lightly, against Harry's skin. Test and temptation for him. Reassurance for Harry that Draco still wanted him, no matter what he had done.
I thought you might, Harry said quietly. Because I burned someone. Because that's the way that a lot of people kill vampires.
Knowing that you can burn someone else does not mean that you will burn me, Draco said. And I will not reject you unless you betray me or the flock. Now, what would make you turn against me?
If I discover you drained a human who was unwilling to donate his blood to you, and it wasn't an accident, Harry said, after another few moments of thought, his voice thick and heavy.
And nothing else? Draco rose to his feet and reached out to lay his hand gently along the side of Harry's neck.
Not if I killed someone else. Someone who was violent to you or threatened you. Not if I ventured out to defend myself, to carry the war to the ministry.
Harry shook his head. Draco smiled and drew him to his feet this time, and bowed his head so that his mouth lay near Harry's throat. He drew Harry's head down a moment later, so that his mouth was in the same position along Draco's throat.
This is how a dominant vampire stands when they want to seal an alliance, he said.
I don't ask you to drink. I want you to stand like this with me.
And Harry did, with his eyes closed and his breath rushing along.
Draco closed his eyes and did much the same thing, with the absence of the breath. In that silence, Harry passed through grief and self-hatred, and perhaps understood that there was absolute acceptance for him here, if he wanted it. Unflinching, that facing off what he was, that acknowledgement of his power and his gifts. And Draco felt and was and had the same thing.
There is nothing on earth that would make me yield this. Nothing that he would ever do, even if he could.